listening to WBAI in New York.
WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Con Sabor Latino. Viva Con Sabor. It is 10 a.m. here in New York City. Coming up next is the program Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert. Please stay tuned.
A boutique and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It'd be paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we're gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you could join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water or healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for Wednesday, November 8th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Our guests this week are Jess Kennard of Beyond Plastics and Joel Kupferman from the New York City Environmental Justice Initiative, formerly known as the Environmental Law and Justice Project. But first, we have information on an online program tonight on solar electrification, an update on NERDLs, Michigan's right to repair bill, a hearing on PCBs in the Hudson River, and plastic-eating mushrooms.
Solar United Neighbors and Rewiring America are hosting a free web seminar, Solar and Electrification, Better Together, tonight at 7 p.m., including information on how the Inflation Reduction Act can help you replace your fossil fuel powered devices with electric ones, and providing simple steps that you can take to electrify your life. The registration link is on our website, ecoradio.org. Solar United Neighbors also has a petition to protect net metering in numerous states. Widespread throughout the United States, net metering is what happens when solar panels create more energy than is needed on site, and the meter runs backwards, and the electricity generated is fed into the grid. Nearly every state has it in some form. Only 3 states have no compensation for feeding into the grid, and 42 have a full net metering program. It's important to ensure that general net metering remains as part of the energy program everywhere. Commercial net metering was an early New York State victory for Ecologic and the New York Climate Action Group.
A recent email from Oregon State and U.S. PIRG Public Interest Research Group mentioned a new bill regarding NERDLs, the Plastic Pellet-Free Waters Act. Longtime listeners will remember our May 10th, 2022 show on NERDLs, little plastic pellets that are raw materials for so many of our plastic products. This bill is a long time coming. It will require the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, to create within 60 days regulations that prohibit the discharge of plastic pellets into the waterways, storm drains, or sewers from facilities that, quote, make, use, package, or transport plastic pellets or other pre-production plastic materials.
We have some good, somewhat good news from Michigan. Their Farm Equipment Right to Repair Bill came out of committee, a first step toward passage of this important legislation. And we've talked to some native Michiganders who listen to Ecologic. Hey, time to call home.
From ECOS, which used to be some of us, More Plastic Waste Campaign. Scientists have discovered mushrooms that can devour plastic waste in a matter of weeks. Plastic that would otherwise remain in the ocean forever. Right now, 91% of the plastic we use can't be recycled, and every minute another truckload is dumped into the ocean, suffocating sea life and spreading pollutants across shores. These mushrooms could eat up to half of the plastic waste being dumped in the ocean. Fungi, like mushrooms and yeast, are part of nature's cleanup crew. The enzymes they produce can break down pollutants and clean up everything from oil spills to toxic pesticides. Nearly all the plastic ever created still exists in some form today. So scientists are researching how to use these mushrooms to try and break down all types of plastic and also ways to make them possible to recycle and reuse. ECO reports that there are already trials of industrial-scale use of plastic eaters in France and Australia. We think that this is great, but are concerned about unintended side effects, which might take some time to show up. Let's do all the research first and not find problems after the fact.
There's been talk about organisms eating plastic for years now, about 20 years. Microbes of all kinds and fungi of all kinds. If the mushroom spores are carried to an inhabited area, which is most of the land area of Earth, and they start eating plastic products, all hell will break loose. The petrochemical industry won't be able to sell any plastic, maybe not even make it, or they'd have to lace it with poison. Fungi are so closely related to the animal kingdom that most fungicides poison humans and other animals too. Metal mining and ceramics will quickly be in short supply as mining picks up. And mining is one of the most environmentally damaging industries that there is. This is probably why the organisms eating plastics have been known since at least 2012. They haven't been cultivated commercially. There are microbes that eat oil spills in warm areas such as the Gulf of Mexico beaches. They don't survive in Alaska. Those microbes are how oil companies find oil and gas in the deep ocean. That's a science fiction dystopian scenario come to life.
Now we welcome our guests, Joel Kupferman and Jess Kennard. Please introduce yourself. Jess?
Hi, thank you for having me today. My name is Jess Connard. I am an East Palestine resident, an advocate for the folks who've been impacted by the train derailment, and Appalachia director for Beyond Plastics.
Thanks. And Joel?
I'm environmental attorney, New York City, but covering New York, the country, and beyond. I'm head of the Environmental Justice Committee of the National Lawyers Guild, which had set up a East Palestine legal initiative.
Good.
And I am co-chair of that committee and also head of the Environmental Justice Initiative. And part of our interest comes from our long-term experience with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the link between East Palestine and 9/11 that the WBAI listeners would definitely appreciate.
Now, we're talking today about vinyl chloride, which made the news as part of the, quote, controlled burn after the East Palestine, Ohio derailment. Jess, why is it so dangerous?
Yeah, we've actually known that vinyl chloride has been a carcinogen for about 49 years now. actually banned in several products like hairspray and cosmetics when that was discovered. The dangers of vinyl chloride still persist today, unfortunately. When this product is manufactured, vinyl chloride exposure is known to cause liver cancer, lymphoma, leukemia. But it's not just cancer. We also know now about hormone disruption, endocrine disruption. Pregnant women can have increased risk of miscarriages, birth defects, when exposed to certain levels of vinyl chloride in the air. So this is a really dangerous chemical.
So it sounds like it would be especially hazardous to pregnant women and their fetuses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is obviously something that most people care about, I hope. You know, the idea here is that 99% of vinyl chloride is used to make a very common product that we are all very familiar with, PVC plastics. When you have a product that is so present, it's very important to know what is used or how that product is used, how it's created, and how it's disposed of. PVC is your number three plastics. These are plastics that cannot be safely recycled. They show up in PVC piping, obviously, also vinyl siding, windows, flooring, and even
duckies.
Children's toys. So our children are chewing on PVC plastic, which is made from a known carcinogen. So I think that that's really concerning. And when you're talking about your home and, you know, structure fires, potentially vehicle fires, you have all this PVC plastic that is being burned. And this happens all the time. And when vinyl chloride or PVC is burned, we know that dioxins are formed. And a statistic for you, for your first responders, this is obviously something that we also care about. PVC is a significant threat to the health of firefighters. And since 2002, almost 2 out of 3 firefighters who have died in the line of duty have actually died of cancer. So I think that that's a very important thing that we need to recognize, is that PVC is the hazard here.
Wow. And I'd say a load of other chemicals that were present. And not only, it's not in its inert form, it's a solid plastic ducky, it becomes even more dangerous when it's burnt, when it's burning. It creates physogene. And also, we got to look at this rail train wreck, that it's also a combination of other chemicals. So you have those. And also, I would state that we don't know what was in those tanks, tanker cars, that we have some healthy skepticism that we're not being told the truth in terms of what was there. But also, science-wise, we don't know. We didn't measure all the dangerous combinations that get created when chemicals are burned, especially burned together. So,
don't they have to label train cars if there's hazardous chemicals in them?
The train cars are labeled. We're not sure if the labeling was correct.
They do have to be labeled. In the circumstance of the East Palestine train derailment, as I understand, the labels were melted. They were burned, and nobody could figure out what was on the car. And the manifest was not readily available, which is also a huge problem. And I think that they are moving to make that adjustment to allow first responders to know what they are managing in terms of trains. But if we would have had a train derailment and the products on that train were sustainable products like hemp or wheat or something that wasn't vinyl chloride or benzene or butyl acrylate, if we would have had sustainable products on that train, East Palestine would not be in the situation that they are in. We are in this situation with our constant creek contamination and exposure to these chemicals and the oil because of the insatiable appetite that these corporations have for plastic production, which really is related to so many other industries, such as, and we could talk about this at some point, but the fracking industry. That's the only way that they are making any money at all, is because of its relation to plastic production.
Wow. Are we talking about ineptness? Or are we talking about a massive cover-up? Or both?
We're talking about both, and also you could add on unequal and incomplete enforcement by the feds, the state, and local government. So there's laws out there, notification laws, there's EPCRA, the emergency warning that the first responders should have been told, CERCLA, and the like. And one of our mantras of the Environmental Justice Initiative is that a good law without enforcement is worse than no law. Because the residents of East Palestine just assumed, rightfully so in a way, that these laws are being enforced and being protective. So we should have known. But also, besides knowing all those bad chemicals are out there, this rail company has a history of train derailments, a history of bearings burning up on their trains. So the government had notice that there is a problem, and yet they didn't follow through. They just basically let the train company and other train companies ride slipshod over the regulations. And then we have to ask, who is in charge here? All right. We're still deferring to the rail companies. And our concern also was that there was overlapping jurisdictions, the feds, the state, and the local. And we should assume that there'd be extra protection, but there was not. There's this game changing that people are just blaming each other. So I think we have to look back and say, is it just the law, you know, the non-enforcement of the laws, but who's really pulling the shots here?
Yeah, we talked earlier about the evacuation and how that was announced and when it was announced and why. Did you want to comment on that, Jess?
Jess, how far did you live from that train derailment?
Yeah, so my home is just over 2 miles from the train derailment, and the tracks do run right behind my home. So I think with the evacuation, you know, everybody experienced it differently. So folks that were closest to the derailment, I know that there were some notable police officers that were going door to door, trying to get people out of their homes. There were some phone alerts that had gone off. Some did not go off in some areas, and that was obviously a concern. As far as me and my family, we did not evacuate the night of the derailment, but we did evacuate the day of the purposeful release of the 116,000 gallons of vinyl chloride into a ditch that was purposefully set on fire. Wow. And this was done ultimately to get a railroad through. We heard during the National Transportation Safety Board hearing this summer that was held in East Palestine that the vent and burn was not necessary, that the vinyl chloride was reducing in temperature and did not need to be vented and burned. This was a bombshell for sure for our community that decision was made to vent and burn when there was recommendations from the chemical company that didn't need to happen.
Oh boy.
So there was concern of an explosion, but as I understand, the recommendations were to let the cars do their job, which is what they were doing. So it was more of a sense of urgency to get the train through than it was to protect the people.
There were other hearings this week that you were participating in. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. So the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine held a 2-day virtual workshop where there were residents who were selected to give a testimony and answer some questions about what the concerns were initially, what the concerns are now, you know, what we're concerned about in the future. And there were a lot of speakers from different areas of expertise, academics, independents, that really gave a nice perspective. And I think the goal is to present this as something that is actually beneficial to the residents, which is something that we haven't seen so far. So we have a lot of researchers that come in and they have all this funding for their research, but it's really just to provide recommendations to the agencies that have charge here. And that's not helping. We already have a lot of really great recommendations for rail safety from our rail safety lobbyists, and they're ignored all the time. We have a lot of recommendations on what we should be doing medically, but we have no access to resources to test our bodies for the vinyl chloride metabolite or for benzene. We have no opportunity for early cancer screenings. This is a huge problem that has been happening. But I think after the workshops from the NASM panel, I'm feeling a little bit more confident that those workshops might actually be productive for the resources that we are currently lacking and to help us get those.
Wow. I mean, I've been to workshops and they always seem to be lip service. Why do you feel so confident and optimistic? This is wonderful.
I think there was a lot of stress on how to help the people. And I think that's something that there hasn't been stress on by the EPA or by, you know, some of the other agencies in charge. Early on, a representative, a doctor from the CDC held a community meeting, and we were very hopeful. The CDC at that point had been very knowledgeable about what was going on and how to protect our bodies. But this particular meeting, we were told that it is likely that we were all exposed to hazardous chemicals. There was really nothing that they could do for our exposure at that time, but we were told not to worry because they can treat the cancer when it starts to populate. So it was in that moment that I think most of us started to really get concerned for the future. But I was also hopeful almost in that moment that, okay, we're going to get some early cancer screenings. We're going to have opportunities for medical care. They know what's coming. And then it was silence after that. We actually found out that there were members of the CDC that did get sick, when they were here as well. And still it's been crickets. Our elected officials for Ohio, I have to give them some mad props. Senator Vance and Senator Brown have been working together. Bipartisan support is always good. They've been working on a rail safety legislation, but also more importantly, and what I'm most interested in, is they are pushing for a public health emergency. And this would provide us with an opportunity for potentially Medicare benefits at any age so that we can get the resources that we need.
And I just want to say that speaking of the CDC saying that there could be cancer treatments, to me, is not a green light. It's a red flag. It's too late to treat the cancer. And that's basically the lip service that's here. CDC had the power to push EPA and to declare a national emergency 2-3 days after this event. And they also could have prevented that open air burning. All right. So I think they're just giving us less than hope in terms of, in terms of treatment. The law is out there, and you're right about Libby offering these services, but it took years and a lot of pressure to do that. We're reversing our medical care for people that are out there, including New York State. There's less surveillance. New York State has something called occupational environmental clinics that will analyze people's complaints around an environmental disaster, and they're not doing that anymore. So I think one thing that we have to ask for is solutions besides nationalizing the railroad is out there, that we should have a one-payer system that people are talking about, so people can go get the medical care and analysis right after incidents like this that have baselines or whatever. Now I know, and you can correct me, Jess, that there's a load of private lawsuits that are going on, all right? And it's going to take years or a long time for discovery to find out what people are exposed to. The rail company is saying denying what's there. There's hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, but they knew already. So in the beginning, the law states that this stuff shouldn't have happened. The first responders should have been warned of what was there, not relying on the signs that are on the trains were made of plastic. That's what melted. the valves that are on the trains were made of aluminum, which melted right away. But I just want to say that it's really important that the medical analysis begin in the beginning. And unless we have that in place, there'll be other disasters like this that we'll learn about people's maladies years after.
So excuse us, Jess and Joel, we need to take a short break. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale.
Ecologic covers every environmental issue, so we help all sorts of groups educate and activate our listeners. This makes a donation to us one-stop donating. It's like supporting many groups. Your donations help us to help community groups get the word out about their events and petitions. With a donation of $35 or more, you can choose a gift from our premium selections. Go to give2wbai.org and search for Eco-Logic.
And there is no other station like WBAI. We have longer and more in-depth interviews than almost all mainstream programs, like the ones you're hearing now. We're free speech radio. We don't bend to corporate advertisers at BAI or at other Pacifica stations, as our funds come from listeners like you.
We often hear from people who used to listen to WBAI, usually about how they have rediscovered us and appreciate our independence and the news, information, and entertainment that is so different from corporate media. We have such a great history and a great future. Help ensure that when you tune in next, we're here for you. Please support us with a donation today to let us know that you are listening. No amount is too small or too big. You can contribute by mail or call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
When you choose to become our Ecologic BAI buddy, you're giving us a reliable source of support that we can depend on, just as you can depend on WBAI. We're here for you all the time. But if you can afford to join us as a sustaining BAI buddy, you'll be helping us to keep broadcasting not only for those who can afford to support us, but for everyone in our listening area and beyond, thanks to the internet. Your dollars enable people to listen wherever they are, from people here, people driving on the Jersey Turnpike, to security guards in Australia, to tourists who want to hear a voice from home.
I was answering donor phone calls one day and received one from a woman who was driving on the New Jersey Turnpike and loved what she was hearing. She wanted to know more about the station and if she could hear it on the internet. She pledged for the premium being played at the time, and her voice was so grateful that WBAI exists. Calls like that are really inspiring.
And really appreciated. Mm. If you can donate just $10 or $15 a month, you're sponsoring not only 4 Ecologic programs, but also more than 700 hours of programming each month. How much time do you spend listening to WBAI each month? Do you listen every day, several times a week, to your favorite shows? We're grateful that you choose to spend your time with BAI. If you listen just an hour a day, that's only 50 cents a program. Wow. Where else can you find that much value? Lots of IPM, that's environmental information per minute and per dollar. You decide on an amount that's right for you. Donate each month. Please join us as a sustaining member and Ecologic BAI buddy. Go to give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950.
Becoming a BAI buddy is convenient and budget-friendly. Just a few dollars each month makes you a sustaining member and our buddy. Renewals are automatic, but you can change your donation amount whenever you like. Call 212-209-2950 and say you want a BAI buddy for any amount in the name of Ecologic or all BAI shows. Just a few minutes of your time lets us know that you value independent, progressive news, information, and entertainment.
You'll be proud to be doing your part to keep BAI on the air, serving our communities. You can also visit BAI.org and visit and click the green BAI Buddy sign with the peace stub and sign up through a safe, friendly portal with thanks from us at Ecologic and WBAI. And we'll be talking about alternatives to those PVCs after the musical break.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and our premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
Here's Brian Goodall singing Goes Around, Comes Around, a song about plastic pollution in the oceans.
Never dies. It's floating round the oceans and it's blowing in the skies. Seabirds pick it up and then they feed it to their chicks. They die of plastic poisoning while fat cats still get rich. Hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Plastic packaging, you know it costs the earth. Growers have to pay for it, it really can't be worth all the energy and effort. Put it on and take it off of the dodgy plastic tatted stuff that's poisoning our surf. Hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey. Are under threat as never before. The amount of plastic in the oceans is estimated to be 150 million tons. That's a fifth of the weight of the fish. If this continues unchecked, by 2050, plastic will outweigh all the fish in the oceans. Plastic is not the problem, it's how we deal with it. Last year, 480 billion plastic bottles were sold. That's 20,000 plastic bottles per second. These are used for just a few minutes before being discarded and will pose a threat to wildlife for hundreds of years. Nature has not evolved to deal with these threats. To an albatross, a plastic toothbrush looks like a tasty treat for its young chick. Like chicks of wild albatross that fly around the world, plucking scraps of plastic tat and stuff to feed their little girl. We are happy being fed our food in plastic packages, just as long as it's convenient. To hell with consequences. Hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 yeah. Hundreds of millions of the plastic bags we produce each year end up in the oceans. These are swallowed by marine creatures such as turtles, causing them to starve to death.
Of the fish that eat the plastic, they find floating in the seas. Some get eaten by the owners of the plastics factories. Surely some of them have children, maybe one, a little girl. Poisoned like the wild albatross that fly around the world. Hey, hey.
Think before buying unnecessary plastic. Always recycle what you can. Never allow it to enter the natural environment. What cannot be recycled can be used to generate electricity. If we do not act quickly and decisively, we will choke and poison our oceans. The solution is simple. Just remember the three R's. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
That was Brian Goodall with Goes Around, Comes Around, a song about plastic pollution in our oceans. We like that song a lot, but two quick quibbles. First, making electricity from plastic, which is by incineration, creates deadly dioxins. Second, as important as reduce, reuse, recycle is, refuse comes first, and government policy is needed, as well as everyone's good practices.
And there'll be a link to that song on our website, by the way. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. We're back with Jess Kennard and Joel Kupferman. And Jess, you mentioned that there are alternatives to vinyl chloride, and you're with Beyond Plastics, which has some wonderful reports. Tell us a little bit. Give us some optimism and hope.
Yeah, you know, full transparency and disclosure, there's a lot that we need to learn about safer alternatives for plastic. I mean, it's at this point, you have to understand that we cannot recycle our way out of the plastic waste mess. Calls to action here, things we can do. You can say things as a consumer like, no, I have a reusable bag, or I don't want those little souffle cups to hold my ketchup on my plate. Just put the ketchup on my plate. I think that there are certain things you can do in your community to promote recycling of things that are infinitely recyclable, like glass or aluminum cans. Those products and processes are really important. But the idea that we can recycle plastic is a failure. It's a lie. And we need to really reduce plastic production altogether. Plastic production is expected to double in the next 20 years. So we really need to push our policymakers to stop passing laws around this very egregious process called chemical recycling, which I'd love to talk more about. But the Biden administration at this point really needs to declare a national moratorium on these chemical recycling plants, ending these government incentives for facilities that are trying to burn or melt plastic back into their raw materials. These facilities are promoting a plastic to fuel product, and that fuel is only used to make more plastic. So, so it's kind of a mess, but I think the call to action here is, you know, we need to really urge our policymakers, specifically Administrator Regan at the EPA. He has the power to ban vinyl chloride. And I think that that's a really good start. Yeah. We need to get that process started. So I would urge you, write a letter to the editor, write a letter straight to Michael Regan, pick up the phone and give him a call. These are things that we need to do as consumers, because there's really not too many safe alternatives that are accessible. When you go to the convenience store, say you're traveling, or maybe you just pop in because you're thirsty or want a snack, how many options for a drink do you have that are not in a plastic container?
Well, I carry my reusable mug for coffee.
You can absolutely. Those are really great alternatives. Unfortunately, even doing those things is not going to reduce the amount of plastic that we have. So really, it is a matter of community action, signing those petitions, making those phone calls. You can choose to skip the stuff. Don't drink out of a straw or ask Starbucks to put your coffee in your mug. But ultimately, in order for us to really start to manage the plastic waste, we have to stop producing it.
Yeah, it's good to live your values, but you need bigger policies to really make a dent in things.
And I'm glad you're stressing that it's not our individual choice. It's important to pay attention to our individual choices, but it's really on a much larger level that changes are going to be made. So yes, use your renewables. Don't buy more plastic. But let's stop the manufacturer.
Hey, Joel?
I just want to point out there's a disparate impact on plastics. The recycling plants that aren't working are usually placed in environmental justice communities, frontline communities, people of color. And then when it's not recycled, just going to the dumps, those dumps are in the same communities. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely an environmental justice issue and a question of a civil rights issue.
Well, and let's break it down too. So a lot of people don't realize that there are roughly 13,000 plus different chemicals that can be used to create new plastics. Wow. And these chemicals give it different characteristics like durability, flexibility, color. We already know that 3,200 of these chemicals are considered hazardous, and yet we are still using them. But perhaps even more surprising here is that there are 6,000 plus chemicals that haven't even been assessed for toxicity, and these companies are allowed to continue to use them. This is a problem when you're talking about breaking down or recycling, chemically removing the products into their original state. There are chemical recycling facility proposals that are rearing up in the Appalachian region. So if you live in Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and you hear about these green technologies, advanced recycling, pyrolysis, there are a lot of different names for it. That's what the industry does to confuse you. These facilities only promise to produce hazardous waste, toxic air emissions for these communities. And like Joel said, these are disproportionately located in communities of color or low-income communities across the United States. There are currently 11 constructed chemical recycling plants in the United States. And 8 of them are located in lower than average levels of areas of lower than average income. And 4 of these 11 chemical recycling facilities are considered generators of hazardous waste. So you are taking plastic waste and you're just turning it into more waste. It's not a way or a solution that is even going to amount to anything. Even if there is a really great new report that Beyond Plastics just put out about chemical recycling, and I would urge you to go to beyondplastics.org, and we have a webinar coming up that will be talking about chemical recycling and how dangerous it is. One of the really nice juicy tidbits of information coming out of this report is that even if all of the 11 U.S. facilities for chemical recycling, even if they were operating at full capacity, which they're not, they would handle less than 1.3% of the United States plastic waste.
Horrible.
Oh my God. And Joel, you were quoting David Yost. Let people know what he said that's relevant to this derailment.
David Yost is the Attorney General of Ohio. A lawsuit was brought back a few weeks ago against Northwestern, and he said this derailment was entirely avoidable. I'm concerned that Norfolk Southern is putting profits for their own company above the health and safety of the cities and communities that they operate in. And before this radio show, I read the 106-page lawsuit, and we provide the link. And there's violation after violation, including common laws, and he called it's trespass. Okay, one of the things we have to go to environmental laws that this suit points out that this went into trespass, and then just mentioned that these places are generating facilities, that the recycling place. Mm-hmm. The lawsuit claims that by Norfolk Western burning those chemicals, they created a facility. That was a waste generator facility. It could have been avoided. And there's a whole host of laws that say you can't do that, including getting a permit alone or stopping, the endangerment. So, it's good that the Attorney General is, brought this lawsuit, but I also wanted to just bring it back to New York that we try to get the Attorney General to interact, and many times they tell us they can't because they have to defend New York State DEC and this New York State Health Department that in right now they've been remiss in protecting the citizens of New York. So the law is this big tangle, but it's, I think, similar to the medicine. The law's got to be preventative, not after effects. We're relying on toxic tort attorneys that are there to protect us or try to get us some money after the effects. We need more lawyers and more medical people to get there up front to prevent other disasters from happening.
Yeah. That's prevention instead of a cure.
Right.
Absolutely. Yep.
And also one of the things that governments could do is that besides outlawing and going after these bad guys, they can, the New York City government alone is like the fourth largest budget. Each of these cities and states could specify their procurement. They could out, they could say, we're not buying the plastics. We're not buying everything else. So that's something that's easy to do. We're not stepping on anyone's direct toes, improving enforcement and all those, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. So one thing that people could do is get their local communities, school districts or whatever, to just make their procurement greener. And by doing that, we're not bringing the plastics, we're not bringing the bad chemicals, but also you're producing, a, creating a market for the, you know, right products. And we're rewarding the people who are making the right goods by having procurers.
Yeah, I know collective member Tim Keating and folks did that with Rainforest Woods and got some communities to switch to better materials. So, yeah, plastics are up next.
we're happy to say we're a legal advisor on that, that whole action.
Oh, cool.
And it's, there are so many, like I have had plastic spoons and forks in my hand that turn out not to be plastic at all, but are actually biodegradable. So as things can be made that are just as good, quote unquote, as plastic, that are not plastic. And if a train full of biodegradable forks and spoons catches fire, it's not going to be hazardous, like what Jess had to breathe.
Yeah. When we were doing research for this show, I was on the Beyond Plastics website, and they had a petition to teabag companies to stop using plastic in their teabags. And as a tea drinker, I said, oh, I'll sign that. And Pete's responded and said, oh, well, they, you know, tested these, but we use polylactic acid, which comes from plants. We, you know, and it's compostable. It turns out it's compostable in the big facilities, not backyard compostable, but nonetheless, it's from plants, not from petroleum. So,
we've heard a lot of things that our listeners can do from Jess and Joel. Is there? We have a few minutes left. You have some final words for us, Jess?
Yeah, I think you know it's really important to make sure that you have all of the facts. Just a quick touch on the bioplastics or the compostable plastics. The word bioplastics doesn't have a standardized definition. And so this also is a problem because it's not clear to everybody what that means. And it can actually, a bioplastic can include 80% of the fossil fuel based plastics that we're already using. Mm-hmm. So you have to be really careful when you're talking about these bio based or compostable plastics, because otherwise they're just going to continue to persist in our environment, just like any other regular plastic does, before breaking down into microplastics, which break down into nanoplastics, which have then been discovered in the human heart, breast milk. There are studies about plastics being found in clouds now. And it is really egregious to aquatic life as well as the bird population. And so I think, you know, I don't mean to be all doom and gloom, but I think it's really important to know that it is vital that we turn off the tap to plastic production. And there are so many companies that are pushing these false narratives to this solution. And the only solution is to stop making it. We have to use more sustainable products like wood, paper, aluminum. We survived before plastics. Yep. And we might not survive after if we don't stop making them.
And something you said when we first talked to you, I love. One voice can really make a difference and many can be unstoppable.
Yay. Yeah. Well, with that, it's time to wrap up.
Already.
Time goes by so fast. So thank everybody. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. For more information, you can go to beyondplastics.org and NewYorkEnviroLaw.org. That's NYENVIROLAW.org. We have information over a wide variety of informational issues on our website. That's ecoradio.org. Hopefully you all have that saved on your computers, ecoradio.org, where you can find links to our previous shows on the East Palestine derailment, on NURDLs, and on many other environmental issues. Look over our website, ecoradio.org. If there's a show or news report that you'd like to hear an update on, there is a hyperlink near the top of the page, just under this week's promotional meme, to email us. And please go to givetowbii.org, where you can become a BI buddy, choose a premium, or go to the Science Book Club.
Join us next Wednesday, November 15th at 10 a.m. We'd love to stay in touch with you. To those of you online, sign up for our email list while you're checking out ecoradio.org. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
We want to let you know that Bethany Church in East Rockaway on Long Island is still helping Sandy survivors. Ken is going to be at a fundraising comic book convention on Saturday, November 18th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Bethany Congregational Church at 100 Main Street, East Rockaway, Long Island, Saturday, November 18th.
Also, Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, Scenic Hudson, and Riverkeeper will be holding an online public hearing, public briefing on the Hudson River PCB Superfund site on Tuesday, November 14th from 5:30 to 6:30, sharing updates about the Hudson River PCB contamination. This is important information ahead of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's upcoming release of the draft 5-year review of the Hudson River cleanup. Details of how to join this briefing are on our website, ecoradio.org.
And Beyond Plastic has two events coming up on East Palestine and vinyl chloride. Watch for them.
WBAI is community radio, and there's lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes your broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We're always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, November 15th at 10 a.m., we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. between Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So
give me the warm power of the sun. Give me the steady flow of water. Give me the spirit of living things as they return to play. Give me the restless power of the wind. Give me the comfort.
Look out for the 2023 Brooklyn Folk Festival, coming your way November 10th through 12th at St. Anne's Church in Brooklyn Heights. BrooklynFolkFest.com for full schedule and tickets. This year, we've partnered with Folkways Records to celebrate their 75th anniversary. The festival will feature numerous Folkways artists, including Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Peggy Seeger, The Fugs, Alice Gerard, Jake Blunt, Dom Flemons, Charlie Parr, and more. There's over 40 bands, plus workshops, jam sessions, film screenings, and the world-famous Banjo Toss Banjo Throwing Competition. Visit BrooklynFolkFest.com for full schedule and tickets, and see you November 10th through 12th at the Brooklyn Folk Festival.
VAI 99.5 FM y el programa Con Sabor Latino presentan Salsa Explosión Fundraiser con los mejores artistas de la salsa, Eddie Montalvo y su orquesta. Dani Martínez y su charanga Cubano Rica, Van Lester, Denis Hernández y su conjunto Amalia, Nodal y su sonero de Oriente, y en las mezclas musicales el que más baila y hace bailar, DJ Andy. Homenaje y reconocimientos a Eddie Montalvo, Carmen Lavoy, Eddie Servigón y Adalberto Santiago por su trayectoria musical. Miércoles 15 de noviembre, SOB 204, Barrick Street, New York. Donación $25. Salsa Explosión con Sabor Latino.
Repita.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for advising local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting through Zoom on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. This is the last regularly scheduled monthly LSB meeting before the newly elected LSB members who have been announced are seated on the board in December. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. It includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website, or by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And entering this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And the password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we sure hope that you do.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future?